This is a dramatic way to start the week, this song.
What is this?
What is this, Jasmine?
It's called Muse, Night of the Cendaya.
All right.
Well, I'm
very traumatic.
Upset because I forgot to change my password and now I'm locked out of my account.
Oh, you can't get in? All right, we'll fix that. I'll help you. I'm your tech help.
Oh, I'm in trouble.
Hi, everybody. It's Bill and it's Wendy. Welcome to the show. This is Monday, and if you want to join us, 312-981-7200 will get that done. You can call us there. You can text us there. Oh, just a couple things to discuss at the very top of the show, and then we'll certainly go into Martin Luther King Day. Mary Schmeek of the Chicago Tribune will be filling in for Eric Zorn today. Looking forward to seeing Mary, and a lot of fun surprises. Thing number one, I know you're not a Cubs fan, but last night they showed highlights of the Cubs convention. Did you see any of this?
I heard some foul language.
Yeah. Wilson Alvarez. Mm-hmm. Right. Wilson Contreras. I'm sorry. I get my Wilsons mixed up. Wilson Contreras used some dirty language to describe an incident with the Cubs.
How about it?
Yeah. But did you see Kyle Schwarber by any chance?
No, I heard he lost weight.
He lost 20-something pounds, and he's almost unrecognizable. I only knew it was him because they said, and a big surprise from Kyle Schwarber, and then they showed him, and 20 pounds made a big difference on him, because you'd say to yourself, well, that guy's built in a certain way.
Like
where,
a brick house.
Yeah, that's right.
Meow.
Like a Jack brick house. Hey! Ooh, that a boy, Kylie. So they showed him, and it took me a minute or two to go, oh, so that'll be the this year's version of Kyle Schwarber. I'm used to seeing a thicker version of Kyle.
Did he shave too?
No, he still has
the so that's how you knew kinda, who he was.
Yeah, that helped a little bit. And he was wearing a jersey that said Schwarber.
Oh,
so that's always a clue. But good for him. He says he wants to just move around the field easier.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess kids were chasing him or something.
He can get to those fly balls quicker.
Right. Much more fleet-footed now, Steve. You'll see. He'll be catching everything. Anything within a 10-mile radius, he'll catch. You'll see. It'll be great. But I love him.
At least he's trying, you guys. Go ahead and make fun of him.
I give him huge credit. You
know, making fun of him.
I'm not making... I would not make fun of him. Mm-mm. All right. Now, on a more serious point, this is something you and I have discussed a little bit in the office today. You know, the last couple months, nearly every day, there's another name or two or three that come out of men who have either harassed women or are being, kind of accused of harassing women. And this one got a little ugly for me. I'm a huge fan of his work, and that's on Aziz Ansari.
But even if you weren't a fan of his work, it's a different kind of story, in my opinion.
It is.
And I'm just, you know, an outsider looking in at the way the story's being reported.
Yeah.
But this happened in September.
Right.
A girl that he met, I believe, at some awards show, and he asked for her number.
At an Emmys party? Is that what it was?
Something like that.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, could I have your number? She gave her number to him.
Right.
They had gone on, I believe, a couple of dates.
No.
This was the first one?
This was the first one. Yeah.
They went out to dinner. Oh, yeah, that's right. They went out to dinner and had oysters.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow. Yeah. That's a good date.
Yeah.
And then they went back to his place, his apartment, and allegedly he was trying to court her. He's trying to get busy.
This is what the kids say.
Well, he was hitting on her.
Well, it got to more than hitting on her. I'm trying to remember his exact wording he said, but there was sexual, how did he put it?
I'm trying to look it up, so
yeah,
we know.
Yeah, all right. I don't want to say the wrong words, but he said that there was sexual activity between the two, which he believed at the time was consensual, but then found out the next day that she was not pleased with what happened.
Right. It turned sour when they went back to his apartment after dinner, according to this 23-year-old woman. She says Ansari was persistent in trying to undress her and initiate sex, even after she told him she was uncomfortable. She told this to a publication called The Babe.
Which is what? I don't know what that is.
I'm not really sure.
A newsletter about Babe Ruth that comes out every couple of weeks? Because I'm going to subscribe to it if it is.
I don't know.
Kyle Schwarber and I are looking for something to read for the rest of the winter.
Well, it includes a text screenshot from the following day in which the woman tells Ansari, "It's like nothing changed even after I expressed that I'd like to slow it down." In a statement released by Aziz Ansari's rep, he says he was surprised and concerned to find out their evening wasn't consensual. "I took her words to heart and responded privately after taking the time to process what she had said."
Can I read a sentence that I think is key?
Yes.
From Ansari. "The next day I got a text," and this is his account of the text, so we need to know, say that. "But the next day I got a text from her saying that although it may have seemed okay, upon further reflection she felt uncomfortable."
So did she word it that way, or was that his perception of what she was saying?
She worded it that way.
And if that's, I mean, so...
So she knows right off the bat that his version of what happened and her version are different.
Well, but she seems to be saying that even though last night... the indications I gave to you was that it seemed to be okay.
Yes.
And I've thought about it more, and
so
now
that
it's
is very
un-okay.
Telling. Because she's almost admitting that...
he'd have to be a mind reader, a future mind reader.
Right, right, right.
Well, now she's saying she didn't want to move so quickly as it was going on, but she did kind of give in to it.
Yeah.
This is what I'm concerned about. They went on a date... things happened, and the next day, and this was back in September, the next day he says, "I got a text from her saying that, you know, I felt uncomfortable, even though it may have seemed okay." And he apologized at that point and said, "Oh my God, I felt a different way. Yeah. I was surprised. I was concerned." He said, "I took her words to heart and responded privately after taking the time to process what she had said." Because I'm sure he was surprised going, "Wow, I thought that went kind of well."
Right.
And he apologized. So my question is, why does she go to the babe now and say something when it seems like it was kind of, if she felt funny about it after the fact, told him, he said, "Oh my God, I'm sorry you felt that way. I apologize. It seems like it's over with." Why does she now come forward and say, "Oh, look what he did"? And now his parents know that he had sex.
Well,
that bugs me.
His parents probably assumed.
Yeah, but they don't want to see it in print. It goes into detail in some of these stories.
I think they're probably more upset that something toward had gone on during this encounter than the mere fact that he was having sex. I'm sure that at some point they go, "Our son's a TV star. He's
I guess.
Probably having sex with somebody."
But why does she bring it up now? I'm just kind of confused.
You could probably make the argument that because there's been such a rash of these things.
I thought, too, she said that she was upset that he was wearing the...
Time's up button.
Time's up button
at the Golden Globes. Right.
Yeah, but he... Listen, if she, I'm not defending him. I just know from the information that I'm hearing, it seems like things were going fairly well. She had second thoughts about it later, told him that. He said, "Oh, my God, I'm sorry you feel that way.
Yeah, yeah.
I really apologize for you feeling that way." And then isn't it done?
Hard to say if it's done or not done. I kept thinking, much the way we thought about this with Charlie Rose and Matt Lauer, that as the stories keep getting reported, are Matt Lauer and Charlie Rose going, "Wow, at some point my name is going to be part of the story." So over the last couple of weeks or months, was Aziz Ansari thinking to himself, "Oh, there's this thing kind of lingering from September. Am I going to be part of this very soon?" And the answer was yes. He now is part of this.
But do you think he was worried about it? In my opinion, he's thinking, "I apologized to her. I took her words to heart and said, 'Oh my God, I'm so sorry you felt that way.'"
Yeah.
In perhaps in his eyes, he thought it was all handled.
Do you know who Barry Diller is? He's an executive TV movie producer.
I know the
name.
He has headed
up movie production companies and stuff. Barry Diller was on with Christiane Amanpour a week ago on CNN. He was her guest. And he said that right now, the topic was the climate of what's going on in Hollywood right now as a result of all this. And he said right now he doesn't know a single guy in Hollywood that's not going through the Rolodex in their head thinking, "Okay, this happened 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago.
That's sad.
Is it going to come up?"
Isn't that sad?
It's sad from every direction. You know, it's sad that something may have happened that's been, you know, held back or repressed for various reasons. But yeah, I mean, it's no matter which way you look at it, yeah, it's sad. So then you have Liam Neeson's statement, which is that he believes right now that this has become a witch hunt. Which is, you know, It's his opinion.
There are women that I feel don't have the right to put me to if somebody said something bad to you. If you were attacked, mm-hmm. if you were abused, mm-hmm. God, by all means, mm-hmm. for sure. But if somebody said something inappropriate to you, that doesn't, in my opinion, qualify right. for the Me Too hashtag. Right. I don't know. I'm sorry.
No, you're not the only one who feels that way. I mean, a lot of people feel that
so
way.
So I don't know if it's a witch hunt, but I do know that
this would be
it's
a great
bubbling
time
up.
If you had a gripe against somebody in the business, this
revenge is sweet.
This
Bill.
Would be this would be your time.
I'm
going to
tweet something about you.
So that makes it even sadder because the majority of these are legit and horrible.
Yes, I agree
right?
with you.
So that makes it harder to decipher which ones are the legit ones. And which one could potentially be somebody going, wow, I tried out for a job with this guy and I didn't get the job. I'll fix this. You know, you hate to think that that's a possibility, but it is a possibility. It's a remote possibility, but it's there.
And who was the woman celebrity? Was it Angela Lansbury who said, you know, people are looking for it or the way they act, they're asking for it. I know Donna Karan said the way people dress.
Yeah.
And Catherine Deneuve, who is very beautiful, said something that she took back, I think.
Yeah, there have been several retractions of statements over the last couple of weeks about this.
I don't think Liam Neeson should have worded it that way.
Right. Right.
It just...
All right, let's do this. We'll take a break. If you want to discuss this with us, we're easy to reach. We're at 312-981-7200. You can call us there. You can text us there. We're talking about Aziz Ansari and his involvement in this Hollywood scandal.
What do you call him now?
Aziz, I'm sorry. More after this, Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right, it's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Aziz Ansari is a young, up-and-coming actor and stand-up comic. Very funny. He's got a show called Master of None on right there on your TV. Watch it on your TV. So in September, he went out on a date with a woman that he met at a party. The date seemed to be going well. They went back to his place, engaged in what he calls some sexual activity. He thought everything was fine. He found out the next day that she was not fine with what went on, and her story has now been published in The Babe, telling that she is recanting what happened, saying that I'm not pleased with what went on. She felt violated by what went on with Aziz Ansari.
Which he did apologize after getting the text the next day and say, oh, you know, I want to validate your feelings, and I'm sorry you felt that way. I thought it was consensual. Someone has texted in, and I don't know this to be true, but 630 says this is a young woman having regrets about a consensual sexual encounter after a date.
You know, I guess realistically, the only people who know exactly what went on are the two of them, right?
Yep.
So it's hard to say. I'm sure that almost anybody who's sexually active has had an incident or two.
I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah. Where looking back, you say to yourself, that got a little crazier than it needed to.
Maybe, I should have gone home.
Yeah. Right? So it does have all the earmarks of that sort of thing. But again, the only two people who know are the two of them.
Why do you think they call it the walk of shame the next day when you're leaving a place with your pantyhose ripped?
Yeah. Makeup all over the place.
Yeah.
The raccoon makeup.
Right. Yes.
How many times, Bill?
Yes. Oh. Oh.
Is that when you stopped wearing makeup?
That's one of the reasons.
Stop wearing pantyhose for sure.
Right.
No one wears pantyhose anymore.
And like Buddy Ebsen, I was allergic to the makeup.
Oh, as the
The Wizard of Oz is the Tin Man.
Yeah, that's right.
And I always wore Tin Man makeup, which was ridiculous, but I thought it made me look more attractive.
And people identified you when you were walking home in the
oil
morning.
Oil can.
It's not funny, and I don't mean to laugh about it, but it just seems like it was handled, and now all of a sudden it comes out in this whole Me Too thing. I don't want to not validate her feelings. But I don't know why it has to come in the public now.
Oh, that's hard to say. And I have to say as a quick side note, I now get upset with myself when it's somebody, there have been several names linked to this who are people that I like, you know? Starting with Kevin Spacey. Kevin Spacey was the first one where I go,
great
I
actor.
Love Kevin Spacey. Yeah. Oh, don't, you know? So now I'm like filtering these to people that I like and don't like. Like when it's somebody like Aziz Ansari, I'm like, well, that can't be true. That's a guy that I like. But then there's been other actors or producers and I go, I don't like that guy. It probably happened. And that shouldn't be.
We're all doing that.
I shouldn't be married.
We're all doing that. Weinstein looks like a guy who would do something like
that. Isn't that terrible?
Look, that's what we're doing in politics right now.
Yes,
that
guy, you're right.
That must be lying. He's not lying.
Right.
I like him.
Right. There have been a couple of actors where their names have been thrown into this. And
James Franco.
Yeah, I was thinking Franco.
James Franco's another tough one. And again, it's because I like him. Like,
I know,
because
he's
like
a great actor.
Well, of course, James Franco.
I know. That's not right of us.
So James Franco's stance on this is very interesting, because instead of shooting this down, were there five women or six women that have
come
forward?
There were five the last I looked, right. And there may be more.
So at least five for sure who have accused him of things that were inappropriate. And his stance is really interesting. He says, I don't want to shut this down. Women have a right to be heard. If they think something happened that shouldn't have happened, by all means, speak up. Very, very strange to take that stance. You would think he'd just defend himself and go, well, this is preposterous. Why would I? I wouldn't do something like this. But instead, he's saying, no, this is what we're all fighting for, is the right to be heard in a situation like this. I don't know what to make of that.
And Ashley Judd is coming out saying with James Franco's response, I think what James said is terrific, Judd told the BBC, and I think that we've all behaved at a certain level unconsciously and done things that were insensitive, inappropriate, without necessarily understanding that they were, I mean, we've all operated with a certain amount of tone deafness, and I like the culpability, and we have to have restorative justice.
I'm not sure what that means.
I'm not sure what she says lately, pretty much in a lot of things.
Means.
I don't know if you've seen her in the new Twin Peaks. She is out there. I don't know. And this is about men and women being all together and having a more equitable and just workplace, home life, social spaces. I mean, we know that when women are empowered in the workplace and are in decision-making positions, that workplaces have better financial outcomes, and there's less harassment when there's more diversity, and it takes that kind of individual accountability to collectively make the change on a large scale.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not really sure what she's saying here. Does she support what he says?
It seems like yes. It seems like what she's saying is he's handling this the right way.
And then Franco says, I pride myself on taking responsibility for things that I've done. The things I heard that were on Twitter are not accurate, but I completely support people coming out and being able to have a voice, because they didn't have a voice for so long. So I don't want to shut them down in any way. It's, I think, a good thing, and I support it. That is a good way of responding to it, but then did he do it or did he not?
That's what I mean, is you walk away going, oh, that's so diplomatic the way he's handling this.
He's a good actor.
I don't know. Yeah, he's a great actor. So
acting now?
I don't know. I can't tell. All right, we'll take a quick break. We have some news, and then there's more show coming your way next. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
He's duck and cover. Duck and cover.
He did what we all must learn to do.
You and you
and you
and you. Duck and cover.
All right, just hearing that song scares
sure
me.
Remember what
No, it's all you have to do is just cover your head, and anything that happens, any missiles, any nuclear weaponry, can't hurt you. You're fine.
All right, well, something happened over the weekend, and I saw numerous screenshots of what was texted to people as an alert. And my friend Vicki Ledley, who I have known since high school, has lived in Hawaii. How long have you lived in Hawaii, Vic?
Almost 10 years as of February.
And it's a horrible place to live, isn't it, Vicki? Why would you want to live in such a hellhole?
Well, after being in Chicago all those years during winter and construction, those two seasons, it's not hard to leave.
Yeah, I bet.
All right, so you get Saturday morning, you get a text that comes really loud, like we get for a weather announcement or some kind of snowstorm, but your emergency alert says ballistic missile threat inbound to Hawaii, seek immediate shelter, this is not a drill. All right, you see this, Vic, what goes through your mind, seriously?
Well, at first, you look at it and you're like, is this possibly true? And then you think, why are no sirens going off? At least that's what was going on in my head. Because over the summer, they did have a little bit of a blurb about, you know, if this were to occur, there'd be more information coming across.
And you guys had started drills, didn't you, somewhat recently? You started doing drills with sirens and such?
They did that on Oahu. Oh, we didn't have that over on the Big Island, but that's where I live. And, you know, again, it was just, you know, shocking. Like, what? Is this a joke? But the noise was actually louder than whether normal floods and hurricane type of alerts. So I kind of was like, what? Is this real? And so I immediately called a friend of mine who knows a lot of people in different arenas to say, can you confirm this is true? And they didn't know either. And then all these people started calling me because I take care of some high-end vacation rentals, and they didn't know what to do. So then all of a sudden I thought, gosh, this is real. What are we going to do? And the thing is, nobody was really informed what to do.
Yeah, so I mean, you don't have basements there. What's the first thing you do? I mean,
well, I just immediately thought, where can I go where there's shelter and the hotels? So the whole Gold Coast, which is about 10 minutes from me, all I could think of was drive down there because they have underground basements where their housekeeping is. And that was the only thing I could think of underground. Then I thought, well, am I going to make it? Because I found out later, you know, how long does it take the missile to get here? Well, they say 15 to 20 minutes. But how soon did the information come across to the FCC? They could have not known for 10 minutes, and it could be arriving in 5 minutes. So you don't really know exactly how much time you have to seek shelter.
Vicki, I don't know how much rational thought is going through your head thinking that this could be the last few minutes on the planet, but do you say to yourself, wow, there's been a lot of tension with North Korea, so it makes sense. They might be doing something. Are you thinking that way, or what's going through your mind at that point?
Well, I think what happened was just about everybody I talked to as well, the first 5 minutes, you're kind of like stunned and not sure that this is true, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, my God, this is true.
Yeah.
You know, because the problem was they should have immediately corrected the error and sent us a new text, because within 10 minutes, a friend of mine had called the police, and the police said this was false. So then he told me that, and then I thought, okay, do I really believe that?
Right.
You know? And so then I tried calling, you know, 911, and I tried calling all these other places, but basically they all shut down because there was such an overload of flood of calls.
That's assuring.
But at that point, Twitter was the one that was like the first person to pop up that it was false.
But and that was 38 minutes after the original alert came, correct? So almost 40 minutes later on Twitter, you find out this was what was sent. There is no missile threat or danger to the state of Hawaii. Report or repeat false alarm.
No, actually, that was from the FCC. Twitter knew it was like in 12 minutes.
Really?
So they knew, they alerted people before, and I'm not on Twitter, but other people I know were and told me that they saw it on there. So, you know, but people were flying down the roads trying to get home, and the worst thing to do is be in your car, and people didn't know that. You know, you're supposed to get out.
You think, I got to flee. I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
So the first thing you do is go in your car. You've learned since that that's not what you do?
Well, I mean, if you knew, you know, maybe you had 10 or 15 minutes and you could get home within then, yeah, sure. But being in a car, if you were to hit with the gasoline involved in the car as well, that'd
sure.
be it. So you're supposed to get out of the car, find some type of a ditch, lay down face down, and that's safer than being in your car.
Although if you have to get across town to get to a shelter, the car might be the only way to try to reach the shelter.
Well, exactly.
You know, so
but
it's
see,
tricky.
We're known as living on a rock, and there's a reason for that, because it's all blue rock underneath us. So that's why people don't have basements. You know, it's very costly to try and dig into that.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And dig down.
Right.
And with the people want views, so they build up. So the hotels are really the main areas that, you know, have underground. Schools don't even have underground. So I saw some people that I talked to yesterday that were in a Starbucks, and they said Starbucks immediately shut the doors and locked them and locked everybody inside. And so it was interesting to know what people were doing for safeguards after the fact when you heard.
Yeah.
And then you start thinking, if you get this alert, does that mean that our government failed us? Like, why didn't the government shoot them down?
Right.
You know, that would be the...
Well, of course. Well, that since then I've been doing some education on that, and I read a lot of articles about how do we trust. They say that, you know, most of the heavy duty stuff is on the mainland, so they would really have to shoot it from there. And are they ready and willing? And do we have the proper safeguards on our island to take care of that? And some say yes, some say no, some say, you know, they're doing some type of upgrade in 2020. Well, that's too late.
Yeah, right, yeah. Right. Vicki, at some point, do you say to yourself, uh-oh, it looks like I only have 10 or 15 minutes left. I better call the people closest to me and remind them of how much I love them. Does that ever come into play?
Oh, absolutely. Yep, that was true. That was what everybody was doing because, you know, it was to us, Hawaii is pretty... other than this, regarding like hurricanes and tsunamis, I mean, we are so more prepared than anybody I've ever seen. And of course, they never actually hit us because our two volcanoes bat the hurricanes in another direction.
Yeah.
But they don't care. They close schools and, you know, everything shut down just in case. But this was different. This, they weren't prepared. And, you know, taking 38 minutes to come back knowing that someone made a mistake and pushed a button, this undermines the public confidence, which reduces effectiveness in a real drill.
Sure it does.
You know, the correction should have been done immediately.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, and so they're going to have to fix that.
And that was, you know, when I was talking to Jimmy Mack about it, the first thing he said, he's like, how did they get the alert? Did the Russians do it? And I'm like, no, Jim, I think it was a mistake. But it took a while for me to find the information of what happened. Changing shifts, someone, instead of hitting a test, hit the real deal,
right,
hit send. There was no way to take it back. But my question is, if they hit that send, why couldn't they immediately hit another one that said, this is a miscalculation, this is not true? How come they couldn't send that one out immediately?
Well, that's what we all have in question as well. And we also know that they have to, when they change the shifts, they actually have to check it. They hit it twice. So the first time, if you hit it wrong, you have a second time to not hit it wrong. And that person hit it twice.
They just wanted to get to the beach.
Was it the same person? Do we know, is it the same person who said that La La Land won for Best Picture last year at the Academy Awards? Because they keep messing up.
I think it was. I totally agree on that.
All right. Well, the good news, I guess, first, the major good news is it wasn't real.
Right.
The other good news is they've now had it. So there's going to be at a shift change, there's going to be two people. So there's always going to be a backup method, which will be helpful. But human error is definitely what caused this. And I can't even imagine. I would have started screaming. I would have just gone in a fetal position and laid there and cried.
Yep.
So I'm glad you did better than I would have done, Vicki.
Yeah, it all depends, you know. I was actually pretty calm, and then, you know, 10 minutes into it, I'm like, all right, I'm freaking out now. And then when I heard from my friend that, you know, the police told them it was okay and it was false, you know, then you're relieved, but then you're like, okay, why isn't the FCC alerting us? You know, maybe it isn't false.
Right.
So you question yourself again. But yeah, it was some scary times for everybody. And I think we're all very shaken up, and we're still shaken up because now we're like, are we really the target? You know, and then the other thing is if they do shoot a missile, those missiles are not 100% accurate. So you would think they would target Oahu because that's where the main military force is and larger population, but they could be shooting five at a time, or they could end up in a totally different island, even though they targeted one island, because they don't know how correct these are.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't imagine they're like exactly to the point and hitting their mark.
Well, as long as we know that we have missiles in place to counteract them, because that's what they're saying, you know, we feel confident that they could shoot another one, and they said within, you know, 5 minutes of one landing, they'd get it. But how do we know that? What if our missiles aren't 100% correct? But
right.
Remember,
it is.
I remember that movie with William Devane playing Kennedy, The Missiles of October. What if someone who's got this alert reacted and went to counteract these missiles
and shot missiles,
and shot missiles off?
Right.
I mean, this is a huge mistake.
Yeah.
Well, maybe if we would just calm down and, you know, try and make peace with North Korea, this wouldn't be happening.
Right, right. Maybe this is just the parent in me asking, but are Lilo and Stitch okay?
You guys crack me up.
Oh, I'm glad you're okay, Vicky. I've known Vicky since freshman year in high school, and one of these days I will come see all your properties because you're a nice little a Hawaiian wahine, and I'm a little howly that wants to come over and visit you.
And now you're having your special missile sale, so what better time to buy in Hawaii?
Well, you know how that is. Things just, you know, eventually disappear, and it's back to the white sandy beaches, and everybody wants to retire here. So hopefully they'll go away, but hopefully that any more threats won't happen, and we're all going to be okay. But appreciate, you know, your thoughts and words, because we do love living here. It's a sense of ohana everywhere you go, and we're lucky to live in Hawaii, that's for sure.
Well, mahalo, my friend.
All right. Aloha, and you guys have a great week.
You
all right,
too. Thanks,
Vicky.
Vicky Ledley lives in Hawaii, and really, I can't even imagine. I would have been freaking
petrified.
Out.
Oh, without a doubt.
I wouldn't have had one rational thought for 1 second, because you see that. And then, seriously, this is another reason why you and Vicky should join Twitter, because 10 minutes later, Twitter said it was false.
Right, right, right.
Before your
I'm
phone.
On MySpace. I'd find out a week and a half afterwards.
God.
All right, we'll take a quick break and then tell you about a movie star that was there in Hawaii who thought his days had come to an end, and a Chicago favorite also. We'll tell you about him. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It is Bill and Wendy telling you the story of the people of Hawaii who thought over the weekend that their lives were coming to a quick end. They received messages saying that missiles were being launched on Hawaii. Among those people, former Chicago White Sox first baseman Frank Thomas.
Oh, he was vacationing there?
Yes.
Would have been a really big hurt.
Huge hurt. And Jim Carrey. Why?
Was he in that? Because I can't.
Why did you make that face?
Because I'm envisioning him in that stupid bathing suit he wore when he was with
Ace
Jenny
Ventura?
McCarthy.
Oh,
remember?
That one? Yeah, yeah. When they switched bathing suits.
And I.
Just, no, he doesn't wear that anymore. They broke up. He doesn't have to wear Jenny McCarthy.
I think he got to keep the suit when they broke up. But that's all I picture him like, just running around being a goof.
Here's what he says. The story out of MSN. Like hundreds of thousands of others, Jim Carrey thought he was about to die shortly after 8 a.m. on January 13th. That was Saturday, right? Mm-hmm. Hawaii residents and visitors were awakened by a frightening text alert warning, emergency alert, ballistic missile threat, inbound to Hawaii, seek immediate shelter. This is not a drill. The actor, like so many others, however, was prepared to face the end. He says, I woke up this morning in Hawaii with 10 minutes to live. It was a false alarm, but a real psychic warning. He tweeted that later in the day, blaming Donald Trump and his political party for fueling tensions in the region. If we allow this one man, Gomorrah, and his corrupt Republican Congress to continue alienating the world, we are headed for suffering beyond all imagination.
All right, big shot in your little Jenny McCarthy suit. What are you going to do about it? What's he going to do about it?
I don't know what he's going to do about it. I imagine that when something like that happens, you want to quickly blame somebody. I don't know. I like blaming things on Trump, too, but I don't know that I'm blaming Donald Trump for this one.
Well, you would think it was legitimate because we're at such odds with North Korea.
Yes.
And I believe Hawaii is the first U.S. territory that it would hit.
Probably. Yes. Yeah. So I guess if you're looking for somebody to blame, I guess you could do that if you wanted to. I would just be so happy that it didn't come true.
Right.
I don't know if I'd be blaming anybody. I just go, I just got another lease on life. This is great. Oh, plus I'm in Hawaii.
Well, that does help.
Yeah.
Although I would go, damn it, we should have chosen Mexico.
Right.
Why did we come to Hawaii this time?
Right.
What did Frank Thomas say? Did he blame Donald Trump or the Cubs? damn Cubs.
He blamed George Steinbrenner.
Okay. All right. Well, there is somebody that we need to blame, and it's the person that hit the wrong button. Sue, you have some more information for us, don't you?
Well, I think it was ABC News last night that I was watching, and they were saying that there was two errors made. One, the human error, where the guy by himself hit the wrong button, and there was no double check or backup. But also, as I told your producer, that I don't know if it's software or whatever, but the function to be able to alert him that it was a false alarm was never downloaded.
Oh, great.
So oh, my God. I can see us not better. Downloading stuff because we're, like, just people.
Right.
But a big agency, right. HEMA.
So they had to download it to be able to tell them that it was a false alarm.
Oh, my God.
And that didn't happen. I bet it's happened since.
Oh, yeah, they did it so they could tell them. But right. Yeah,
it was 40 minutes later.
Right. That's why it took so long, was because that function was not, it wasn't available.
Wow.
File that under a big fat oops.
Yeah.
Imagine that guy at some point thinking, I'm going to go in and ask for a raise, right? I've been working with these people for years. I'm going to go in and say, hey, it's time for a raise. And they're going to go, no, remember that one time with the false alert in Hawaii? You get no raise.
That's unreal. Thank you for the info. We appreciate it, Sue.
Thank you, Sue.
Oh, thank you. Bye-bye.
Have a good week.
And I don't know the difference between a ballistic missile and a nuclear missile either.
I'm not sure I do either.
So I guess the word missile would have just scared
you
anyway. It doesn't matter which
coming,
one.
It could be anything. Yeah.
A ballistic missile uses propellant to go up and then gravity to come down.
And a nuclear missile?
Has a nuclear warhead on it.
Oh.
I didn't know either, Wendy. We talked about it, so I looked it up. So that's what it is. It relies on gravity for its descent.
Steve is one of those rare people that when you talk about something and he doesn't know the answer, he does something about it.
Yeah, like, we don't.
You and I will spend the rest of our lives going, I don't know.
Well, that's because we have Steve Bertrand to tell us.
Right, that's why.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Steve. A quick break. Some more show. News is next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
You know, I think, Bill, that kids should be in school on Martin Luther King Jr. Day because I think we all have a lot to learn about him.
Yeah, this has come up on the show a couple times that you would almost think it would make more sense to send kids to school to learn about Dr. King on Martin Luther King Day than
take
have
the day off.
Yeah. John Russick joins us right now. John is the Vice President for Interpretation and Education at the Chicago History Museum. Mr. Russick, thank you for joining us. What do you think of this idea? Send kids to school on Martin Luther King Day and find out more about this great man.
Well, I think that's an interesting suggestion, but my counter would be to send them to the Chicago History Museum, because that's all we're doing today is talking about Dr. King and his vision for equality in America. And we have great programs going on here today and a brand new exhibition on his life. So in barring the change to the way we mark the national holiday for public school kids, we have something for all those parents who are in agreement with you.
John, the speech we just played, monumental speech, so incredibly important speech. Do you think that Dr. King understood at the time he was delivering the speech that it would go down in history as one of the biggest, most important speeches in U.S. history?
It's a really great question to think about what was in the mind of Dr. King. You know, he was a relatively young man. He wasn't even 40 yet when he was assassinated. So all of these important landmark moments in his tenure as the leader of the civil rights movement in America, you really always have to go back and remind yourself that he was a relatively young man when he took on the mantle of the civil rights movement and really became its chief spokesman. So I think for any of us, when we're doing anything, it's really hard to remember or to feel confident that the thing we're doing at that moment is going to be the thing that we'll be remembered for, even in our small circles. But, you know, the speech was given in Washington, D.C. before thousands and thousands of people. I have a feeling that maybe he knew not only that he had delivered something really spectacular in terms of his speech, but that the crowd's reaction and the sense of encapsulation of all that he'd been talking about with that portion of his speech, he may have realized just how important this speech was. Now, to think that he might be thinking that he was going to be remembered 50 years for it, I think Dr. King wasn't sure where the civil rights movement was going to go. Mm-hmm. Was he actually successful, as successful as we think of him as being? You know, clearly there's work still to be done. So how would Dr. King feel about his legacy? I think that's an open question.
How would Dr. King feel about the way things are going right now?
Right. These are the challenges, I think, for all of us as Americans. I think one of the reasons we did this exhibition is not simply to remember him in the 50th anniversary of his assassination, but to acknowledge that right now there are issues at play, questions being raised about race and racism and its relationship to violence and equality and justice. And it's been going on for a couple of years now, and certainly Chicago is not immune to this. So much of what was going on in the 60s had the ring of this being a Southern problem, a problem that really, if America was going to address it, we were going to address it in these Southern states. And Dr. King came to Chicago and pointed out that Chicago is part of the problem, too. And it wasn't a Southern problem. It was an American problem. And we're still dealing with it 50 years later. So these issues have been highlighted greatly in the last few days, especially. So I think that this is a place to come and look at this story here at the History Museum and reflect on where we are and what we've thought were the ways to solve this problem in the past, and maybe reflect on those and consider new approaches, a renewal of some of our commitments.
Don't you think that there was a horrible irony in what went on with the African nations and Mr. Trump's comments, being the fact that Martin Luther King Day was just about to happen? Don't you just think the irony of it all was just horrendously bad?
Well, I think the timing couldn't have been worse in one regard.
Yeah.
But for what we're trying to do here at the History Museum, there's something advantageous about Mr. Trump's comments in terms of highlighting for all of us how contentious these issues remain in American society, and that we still haven't come to terms with these issues. And the History Museum has also involved in our programmatic efforts here. We've brought in an exhibition that's purely about the history of race and racism in America. So we not only have the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial exhibition up, we also have an exhibition just looking at race and in America and how it takes form and how we think about it and what it means in our society historically and in our present. So there are lots of issues, I think, related to this subject that we still need to grapple with.
In this exhibition, Remembering Dr. King, 1929 to 1968, this is obviously not just today, right? How long is this going to be at the Chicago History Museum?
Right. This exhibition opens today. Today is obviously a special day. It's the 50th anniversary year of his assassination, but it's also one of those few days when Martin Luther King Jr.'s national holiday falls on his actual birthday. So we, for all those reasons, we wanted to have this up today, but it will be up in April when the anniversary of the assassination and the funeral happen. April 4. And then we'll run it through the rest of the year at the minimum. Probably it will be up even on MLK Day next year. So if you don't catch it today, you can come anytime over the course of the year to see it.
John, what's something you've learned about Dr. King that shocks even you? Like, what did you find out about him that you say, oh, I knew a lot about him, but I didn't know that?
You know, the thing that always comes back to me, it's sort of a relearning of a message that I think maybe some of us all know to varying degrees, is just how resilient he was. You know, the man was under threat. His life was under threat almost continuously once he had become a national figure. And yet he continued to put himself directly in harm's way. You think about the speeches he gave here in Chicago and the marches he went through, where there were people who were throwing bricks and rocks and holding bats and just saying the very worst sort of epithets that any of us could hear. And he had a wife, he had children. You know, at the bottom line, like any of us, he just wanted to live his life too, and he had things that were precious to him, and even though his life was cut short, he was willing to put himself in the line of fire, and that continues to impress me and remind me just what an incredible figure he was. And of course, I always come back to the fact that we here in Chicago have to be reminded that we helped shape King's understanding of the civil rights problem in America. He came to Chicago, and our reaction, this community's reaction to him, was so vile and so angry that King actually wanted to make a point about the racism he'd found in the North to expand the civil rights initiatives that were underway in the 60s, and to remind all of America that this wasn't a Southern problem. And in that way, Chicagoans and the city of Chicago contributed to the movement and expanding the movement so that it really had this sort of national impact that it eventually had in the later part of the 60s.
John Russick is with us, Vice President for Interpretation and Education at the Chicago History Museum, talking about a great piece they have going on there at the Chicago Museum. You want to go to chicagohistory.org. That's the website that has all the information. Who is today's Martin Luther King? Is there somebody out there today that you think best embodies the message that he was trying to give out?
Well, you know, that's really interesting.
That's a great question, Bill, by the way, just to give you, John, more time to think about an answer, because, wow, that's a toughie.
Well, you think about who are the folks who really are trying to get beyond race, who are trying to get beyond the limitations of the color barrier, not to say that that wasn't a critical issue then. It's still a critical issue today. But who are the folks who are really thinking about equity in all of its forms across the spectrum? There's been so much positive movement in the last few years, especially. You think about what's happened with LGBTQ rights. You think about what's gone on with the women's movement. I mean, we'll be having the Women's March just next week. So much of the protest that's gone on with the Black Lives Matter movement. I don't know that I could actually name an individual who I think embodies Dr. King. He was a pretty extraordinary individual. But I do think that there's a spirit alive in America right now that has embraced so much of what he stood for. It's largely nonviolent. It's committed to justice. And it's not isolated within small circles of people who are looking for justice for African Americans or looking for justice for gay and lesbian people or for women. These groups see the spectrum of civil rights and the need for equality and justice for all people. And in that way, I think our contemporary time, our contemporary approach to civil rights is broad and strong, and it's very vital right now. It feels like America is thinking about these issues collectively and examining what it means to be an American in a new and vital way. So I guess I sort of skirted the question.
No, that's
question,
fine.
But
it's a tough one.
But I do think that it does become an individual question, though. It isn't up to somebody else. It isn't up to the next Martin Luther King. It's up to all of us. And I think that's the message that comes through here at the History Museum, especially on a day like this.
Very well said.
And we had all our protests in the 60s, but they're coming back. It's like the 60s all over again. So we want change, it sure seems.
Right. And even then, if you look back in the 60s, you know, leaders would come and they would go. People were assassinated in the 60s, and movements that had leaders suddenly were leaderless. And yet, at the foundation of that, the thing that kept that moving forward was that there was civic action on the part of individuals, of citizens who wanted change and kept pushing for it. And I think that's probably the more important message than thinking about who's the next leader. It's sort of finding the leader in yourself.
That was awesome. Great answer there, John. loved it.
Thank you.
The exhibition is called Remembering Dr. King, 1929 through 1968. It's on display at the Chicago History Museum. John Russick is the Vice President for Interpretation and Education at that museum. It's a fantastic place. I went in as a kid on a field trip and just loved it. ChicagoHistory.org is the website to visit. Thanks for being with us today, John. Really appreciate it.
I couldn't be happier to be on the program, and I just want to send an invitation to everyone. This is your museum. This is your history museum. Please come and enjoy what we've done here today.
Excellent. Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Quick break, then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. We'll put some music in later. Do you remember, Wendy?
It's my fault.
There it is. There's the music. Kids love the music, Wendy. It's very popular. Remember several years ago when NASA came up with the idea of putting together a collection of recordings and throwing them out into space so that people from other planets, beings from other planets, could hear it and say, oh, I wish I had an iPod because I would like to download this and play this and use this all the time. Well, now it turns out NASA is releasing those recordings on vinyl. So if
really?
You're a collector, yes. This is from Huffington Post this morning. Earthlings can now order their own vinyl version of the Voyager Golden Record, which NASA sent into deep space decades ago in an attempt to reach intelligent life. The soundtrack has been available on SoundCloud and came out on CD back in 1992, but now Ozma Records is preparing to release it on vinyl sometime in January through a distributor called Light in the Attic, this according to Washington Post. Two sets of the phonograph album with images and instructions in symbolic language, which, by the way, was always the part that I thought would follow the whole plan up. Because
petroglyphs?
What do you... I guess you'd have to... Yeah. You'd have to almost use pictures like IKEA if you're building a table.
Right.
You have to use something like that. Or else the aliens aren't going to know how to play it.
I know. It has to be pictures. How do you...
It would be very
music notes would be one exclamation point.
We don't know. I mean, for part one, we don't know who, if anybody's out there. Part two, we have no idea of how to approach them in terms of simple instruction, like press this button now, not that button, press this button now.
I'm sure they're more technologically advanced. We should just do like the rock and roll devil horn fingers. That should be the petroglyph.
Right.
Like rock and roll.
Yeah. They'll get it. They'll
MF.
Get it. What'd you call me? We have a little bit. Do you want to hear a little bit of the record?
All right. Yeah.
Jasmine, play this for Wendy.
Oh, yeah.
This will be on, you can get this on vinyl later in the month.
Wax tracks?
General of the United Nations, an organization of 147 member states who represent almost all of the human inhabitants of the planet Earth, I send greetings on behalf of the people of our planet.
Silema chemen. Oitnes poteste chairete.
Salutare la toate lume.
Bonjour tout le monde.
Konnichiwa. O genki desu ka?
Hello from the children of planet Earth.
Is that Linus? That last guy sounded like Linus.
It did. That's with the nasally sound.
That's in case the aliens are big Peanuts fans. We want to appeal to them. Now they're using seals, which is cool. There's a rainstorm. Essentially, we created a white noise machine for aliens, Wendy.
They'll need it.
Yeah.
Oh, there's the sunshine afterwards and the
next
birds
one
coming.
Should be a vacuum cleaner. Gorillas
Monkeys.
In the mist. Nice.
I would like this.
Yeah, this. I'm telling you, you can get it in January. I wish.
Is that it?
No, there's a lot more.
Morse code.
Yeah. But these
that
are
scares
all,
me, kind of.
These are all earthen things.
Well, because
we're from Earth. But,
ding, ding, ding.
If we're trying to get something that they can relate to, we should have tried. Oh, this is from the BBC.
Sousa. Oh, no.
No, this is BBC music. On BBC One, more soccer, or they call it football, in brackets.
Monks, chanting monks.
Is that chanting monks?
I think so.
At this point, the aliens, they're looking at their watches.
Where's going, this?
How long does this thing go on for? Because we've got
the
planets.
The Trans-Siberian Orchestra, is that what this is?
Yes. Yes, this is the Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
A didgeridoo? No, this is more island sounds.
Yeah, very Caribbean sounding. A little bit of everything.
This is my stomach growling when I'm hungry.
They would recognize that one. They would all nod. We've heard this one before. That's Wendy.
There's the didgeridoo.
Oh, that's
see?
Better.
I knew
from
there'd
Australia?
Be a didgeridoo. How did I know that?
This is a nice sampler platter. It's their way of, it's like a tourism commercial for Earth. It's like, do you like any of these things? Because we've got all of them.
It's an audio buffet.
Yeah. Yep.
This is X-Filesy. Oh, no, now this is Latin flavor.
Yeah.
Little dancing. This samba.
Yeah, some samba music. It's nice. Ah,
Chuck Berry, baby.
Now they're nodding. Okay, we'll go to Earth. We like Chuck Berry.
This is put together really well.
Yeah, yeah. It's a sampler platter.
What's after Chuck Berry?
You can't follow
Chumba
Chuck
Wumba?
Berry.
Chumbawamba? Yeah. One of those things you spin around that are hollow. Doesn't that sound like that?
That's what it sounds like. Yeah, I bet it is. I bet it is. Not the New Year's Eve one that just makes the clicky noise.
No, this is like a hollow tube that you spin around.
Yeah. Oh, sad music from the Children's Film Festival.
Isn't this Zamfir? Or who is the pan flute?
The master of the pan flute, yeah. Zamfir?
Zamfir. Forgot the M.
See, and they should label this one Zamfir because that's an alien-sounding name. So they'd go, oh, my cousin Zamfir lives on Earth.
Yo-Yo Ma.
Yeah, Yo-Yo Ma. He sounds good.
They're going to have to get Ian Anderson and Jethro Tull in there now soon.
some opera? Here's where the aliens are yawning.
This is beautiful.
Opera. We have opera on our planet. We don't need to go to Earth to hear opera.
They don't have opera.
Opera's intergalactic, Wendy. The Vienna Men's Choir. You always hear about the Vienna Boys Choir, but you never hear about the Vienna Men's Choir.
Now I want a Vienna hot dog.
Their promo guy's not as good.
We should send it with a hot dog.
Right. Right.
Vienna now Beef. Now we're going to war.
The Vienna Beef Boys Choir.
When Johnny comes marching home again. It's
is
not
that
the
what
song.
This is?
No, but it's kind of making me think of it.
Oh, yeah.
Now a stripper.
It's
check
a stripper.
This out, Mr. Alien. Like my games?
We're the only planet with a 2-drink minimum. All right. We'll take a quick break. Mary Schmick joins us from the Chicago Tribune. That's coming up in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Hey, remember when I mentioned Mary Schmick would be joining us from the Chicago Tribune? To
Mary
talk about,
Schmick?
Yeah, to talk about things?
Yeah.
I lied.
Well,
she heard our segment about the noises in space, and she said, this is beneath me. I'm not coming on.
Well, you know what? I don't blame her.
I don't blame her either.
We made a mockery of
yes,
everything.
Yes, we did.
That's what we do.
Of the entire NASA space program, Wendy.
Weekdays from 10 to 10 noon.
10 to noon
here.
On regular radio, and then we're on the shortwave radio for an hour. A couple of things we could discuss right now in the absence of Mary Schmick, which sounds like an ABC after school
special.
It does.
Where are the gumballs?
I was away for this. I was on vacation last week, so I don't know how this played out, but evidently there was some debate here among Chicago politicians. Imagine that for a moment, will you? Try to imagine Chicago politicians not seeing eye to eye on something. But the subject was about textilizers.
Yeah, I heard this, and I kind of liked this idea, to be honest with you.
All right, so this is something that I dreamt of years ago and said they should have this, but now it turns out they do.
You did talk about
this. This is my dream years ago. Here's the story out of the Chicago Tribune. In a bid to crack down on car crashes caused by people texting while driving, Chicago aldermen last week discussed the concept of arming police with devices to tell how recently drivers had used their cell phones. Do you remember? I thought of this and I said, first of all, this is impossible. Nobody's ever going to come up with something like this, but here's what they should have. The same way they do speed guns, whereas you're driving past, they speed gun you, they should have that ability with texts.
Yeah, but all they have to do, Bill, is if like you've been involved in an accident, and this is, I guess, where it would be tricky, because do you have to give them your phone? But all they have to do is look and check the history. And they can tell how long ago you made a call?
There's a slight problem with that. And I know this from experience. Hmm. About 4 months ago, I was in a minor fender bender with somebody.
It's a fun word to say, isn't it?
Fender bender.
I enjoy that. It's not fun to get involved in one.
No, but it's fun to
say
it because it rhymes. So I was convinced.
When was this?
About 4 months ago.
You didn't tell us.
I didn't want to tell because I know everybody
You're
worries.
You're so private.
People worry about me, and I didn't want to create a stir.
I'm the exact opposite of "you're so private."
No, you would have called me beforehand. I think I'm about to get into a fender bender. What? Who is this? So, at an intersection, my car and another car collided.
Whose
right?
fault? Were you behind? You don't have to give out this information if you don't want. Really, you truly don't.
It gets a little tricky.
All right, so
but
you got-
I was convinced by the speed of the other car and by the unwillingness to do anything about the situation that they were either talking or texting on the phone.
Okay.
The car was going, the other car was going very, very fast. And I didn't see anybody texting, but I thought, well, if you were in a situation like this and another car was there, you would do something. You would swerve to not collide.
Unless
but they
you
didn't
weren't
do
looking.
That. Right. So I said to the police officer who came by, could you please check this person's phone because I think that they were texting while
and
driving.
I am a rat.
Well, he said, I can't do that. And I said, why can't you do that? It's pertinent
search.
To this. It's he goes, yeah, I have no
search warrant.
Yeah, yeah. So I said, but if you wait any length of time, she'll just erase it. And he said, there's nothing we can do about a situation like this. But you would think in a situation like that, that's the perfect time to check a person's phone because that's what that crash was all about.
Well, you don't know that to be true, and it's your word against that person's.
But that could either prove me wrong, which I would have been fine with, because then I go, I thought they were texting. I guess they're not. Or it could be a slam dunk and go, yeah, they were definitely texting and driving. Look, here's the history.
Dave, why can't you do that?
Well, basically, if they look up case law or have your legal department check it, they might need a search warrant to actually check the phone. And if they do find enough, probable cause to go through with it, then they'll just have to check the mud records for the phone line and see what phone call or text was going on at that specific time.
What if, Dave, hypothetically, what if the situation was way worse and somebody
Someone
in my
died.
Vehicle, let's say that happened.
Then I think you can check it. But a fender bender?
Dave, what do you know about that? And Dave, you can also say fender bender
it
at some
fun
point. It's fun to say.
Yeah, it's depends probably on the investigative team that's handling the case, how far they're going to go with it.
Yeah, he just point blank said, yeah, I don't have any right to do that.
Can I tell you, I don't know what is wrong with me, but if and when I get pulled over, mm-hmm. I will give you everything.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't do that.
Right.
I shouldn't, but I would. I'd be like, you need my phone? Sure, here. Well, I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
I feel like they have the right to ask.
You want
to
comply.
Yeah, but I don't know that I should now.
Yeah. And Dave, how do you know all this?
Tracking devices that you can actually get for phones to track somebody down if you're looking for them. I mean, the stuff you see on TV is with tracking devices and GPS and all that. I mean, it's been out there for so long. You're like, oh, yeah. It's out there now. Well, everyone's had it for how many years?
Yeah.
I think one of the Judds put one of those. I'm not kidding. I remember the story that I think Winona put a tracking device on Ashley's car. Although Ashley's
Why did
been,
she do that?
Because she wanted to keep track of her for some reason.
Right.
I don't know. But I know you can get these things.
Yeah. All
it's right. As seen on TV.
Just for the Judds or for anybody?
I think for anyone.
All right.
Thank you, Dave, for calling. He wanted no
Dave
part of us
Dave did not want
anymore.
To say fender bender.
No.
He flat out refused to say fender bender, much like the police officer flat out refused to check the cell phone.
Well, because, he didn't want to get in trouble.
But I go, here's my phone. Take a look, because I wasn't texting or talking and driving, because
right.
I never do.
Because a person who wasn't texting or making a call would, of course, turn their phone in.
Right. That's what I thought. I thought, well, this will be a slam dunk, because he'll see in the history, she's right in the middle of a phone call. That's why she hit Bill's car.
Yeah, but what if she was... See, you can't prove it, because what if it was hands-free? It would still register that it was a phone call.
Right, but then that would have given her the opportunity to say, yes, I was on the phone, however, I was complying with the Illinois state law, and look, I have this.
But was she asked the question if she was on the phone?
Nope. He wouldn't even ask it. And I said, but it's important to the case. I said case, because I wanted him to know that...
Did you pull out your little briefcase that you keep in the back for these particular... I put out a trench coat.
I had a briefcase. It was very impressive.
Your glass eye, Columbo?
Yeah. It's extremely impressive. And I had guest stars from that era. Nancy Walker, Burt Mustin.
Oh, I remember who Burt Mustin is. I got to look him up.
All right. So so here's what's at odds is the legitimacy of a textilizer. So-called textilizers could allow officers to scan phones and tell whether they were in use at the time of an accident. This according to Alderman Ed Burke. So if you're doing that, it's essentially the same thing that I'm asking. Check the phone, right? Why is
check
one
the neck?
Check the neck and the phone.
That's Burt Mustin?
Yeah. Why is that funny? He'd be a guest star on an episode
Listeners,
of a show like.
Could you please, if you're not driving and you're at a computer right now, just Google images of Burt Mustin, M-U-S-T-I-N, and you will laugh hysterically because you'll know exactly
Burt Mustin
who he is.
Played an old guy from the 1930s through the 1980s.
Yep.
He's exactly the same. Gus the Fireman on Leave It to Beaver. He was on All in the Family when Edith worked in an old people's home. He was the guy that she brought home one time to meet Archie. He was in everything.
I just, please, listeners, it will really make you chuckle if you just...
He kind of looks like Mayor Koch from New York City.
He's Ed Koch. He looks like Ed Koch
in
50
years. A
skinnier
version, yeah.
Yeah.
But it just made me laugh so hard because, you know, you claimed that if we didn't know something, we didn't look it up like Steve Bertrand
right.
did. I wanted to look up Burt Mustin.
And there's his picture.
Please, listeners, do it because it will make you chuckle. Did it make you chuckle?
It did.
Kim, because you
it
knew
did.
Who it was.
Exactly, as soon as you saw him. And then I was like, oh, it's kind of Ed Koch.
But Burt Mustin, when he was a young guy, like in the 30s, he looked like he was 80.
Yeah.
Right? He looks like if they were going to make a movie out of the painting American Gothic... He would be the farmer guy,
totally.
Right?
And then put Granny Clampett right there, and you got it.
Irene Ryan and Burt Mustin in American Gothic movie.
All right. Sorry, getting back
That's
to you
right.
now.
That's
I just
right.
Was...
All right, so tell me there's a difference in a police officer having a machine to point at your phone and say, oh, look, according to my machine, you've been texting while driving. And my suggestion, which is just confiscate the phone and go, well, we're in a crash case, so I need your phone.
All right. First of all, two different things. You can't, according to the law, even though I would give mine up very easily, you can't just take the phone. So that is not.
But not take it to keep it. Just take, I'd say, because this is just minutes after the collision. I said, you know, just check the phone because that woman was texting while she was driving.
They have proven that they can't. It's private property.
But then why does it become okay for him to just point a textilizer at the phone?
Because I think you have to give permission too. Like, you know, taking a breathalyzer, they have to ask you, are you going to take a breathalyzer? And I'm going to say no.
Yeah.
Whether I'm drinking or not, because what if I use a breathalyzer and there's some leftover breath in there from somebody else? So I would say no.
You always get a clean breathalyzer
test. I don't trust anything.
No?
I don't trust anything.
They have to scrub them.
But they have to ask your permission to take a breathalyzer as they would with this textilizer. And if you refuse, perhaps they will just bring you down to the station anyway.
Yeah.
But I mean, they can't just like have like a Star Trek thing where they zap it on your phone. They have to ask your permission.
But it's.
Can I textilize your phone?
I wonder about the permission part of it. Because you're essentially, you're just scanning, right? You got a scanner, essentially.
I'd love to see
they
you as
They used to use
cop.
Scanners. They didn't even use, they would, they even before textilizers, they'd just go, just hold up a scanner gun. They don't know. Just tell them it's a textilizer.
They'll believe it.
Yeah, they'll believe
and
it.
And then
they
they'll fess
know.
Up.
Right.
Okay, I was on the phone.
Right. Was that Burt Mustin that just drove past? He looks great.
Yeah, in a hearse.
All right. A mandatory break must be taken now. Now we must take a mandatory break. Back after this, it's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, it's snowing again. Enjoy the lovely snow we're getting here in Chicago. Better than ballistic missiles that they got
Way
in
better.
Hawaii.
Far better. All right, we're talking about, two things really. Textilizers, these are devices that may or may not be able to determine whether somebody has been texting during a crash. And then, of course, the other conversation is about Burt Mustin, the great Burt Mustin. And here's a tease for the bonus hour upstairs when we're online only. I just remembered a joke that Burt Mustin told on an episode of The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson in the 70s that made me laugh very, very hard. I will tell you that joke online only. Can't be told on regular radio.
How do you learn anything new with all that minutia rattling around in your
brain?
There's
no room. There's no room for anything new, Wendy. It's all old stuff. It's all the old stuff. All right, so it says here, now Ed Burke wants these textilizers. It says, in many ways, they are the digital equivalent of a breathalyzer. While a handful of government agencies around the country are looking at incorporating textilizer technology in police investigations, none has done so yet. Why not? We need this. This is important. The 14th Ward Alderman, think about it. If somebody you loved was damaged in a car accident.
Damaged? Yeah. What are they, a robot?
Let's say...
injured?
Let's say they lost a limb or something in a car accident.
Wow, you're going right for the...
Wouldn't you want something to prove that the other person was at fault and they lost a leg because somebody was texting and driving? I can't believe they don't have this.
When you have a lawsuit that goes by, that happens, maybe a civil suit, that perhaps you can get a search warrant to... get those records, and as that caller Dave said, you can go to the service provider to find out if they were on the phone at that time, too. So if they would erase the phone, you still could find out. That's if someone loses a limb or dies. But a fender bender, they're not going to go through all
that. You think it's a waste of time?
Well, not for you.
I'm a fan of the truth. I'm a fan of facts.
I know.
Wendy, you know that. The 14th Ward Alderman, however, did not propose the Chicago Police Department start using these devices, nor was a vote taken. Why bother then?
Yeah, that seems silly.
The whole purpose of these, but this is just like the law that was enacted 2 years ago about no texting while driving. So they made it a law, and how many people get arrested for it every year? Two? Three?
I was the first one to get arrested for it. I was driving down Lakeshore Drive on my phone. And I lied to the police officer and said, oh, it was my kid's school calling, and he still gave me a ticket.
You lied to a police officer?
I did it like in
sin.
Such I've already given up way. It's like...
You did?
Yeah, I know. He's like, he pulled me over on Lakeshore Drive. What are you doing? And I said, talking on the phone. It was kind of an important call that I took. It was my kid's school that was calling. And he goes, you're still on the phone. Can I have your license and your registration?
What if he dialed that number and it wasn't your kid's school?
Okay, first of all, I would not give him my phone. What do you think? He's just going to get in and drive with me?
No, but let's say we lived in a society where that was acceptable and he just said, oh, you called your school? Let me talk to your school for just a second. And then you dial up that number and it's one of your friends and it's not the school. You would go to the big house.
A, I would not. And two, there's no way he'd do it. And I just was trying to get out of a ticket and say, you know, listen, I really shouldn't be doing it. He didn't care.
He didn't? Really?
And I didn't really push it. Like, do you know who I mean, it was an emergency. He bit a teacher or something. I don't know.
Wow.
I just said, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have gotten that. It was my kid's school and I shouldn't have gotten it. Expecting him to go, oh, really? Is everything okay? All right, just be careful.
Yeah,
but no, he wouldn't hear
he
of it.
He didn't do it. Can we take Dan's call for just a second?
We have to.
This is a very important time. Dan, do you by any chance have any songs about Burt Mustin?
There happens to be a great little ditty that came to us some time ago.
Yeah.
And it's rather an epic thing, and I haven't played it forever, but we're going to try and edit it down.
We'd love to hear it. It's a song about Burt Mustin.
Absolutely.
Yep. All right.
Burt Mustin was a character actor. He played Gus the fireman on Leave It to Beaver. Gave the youngster courage, helped him be an achiever. Ah-ooh. He was old Judd Crowley on the Andy Griffith Show. And on the Grand Ike, he called his old lady Dodo. He played Jethro Collins on the Brady Bunch TV show, too. Most of his credits simply listed him as the old man. Oh, well, you couldn't very well expect him to play Peter Pan. He had two roles on All in the Family. I guess they weren't bothered by bad continuity. Burt Mustin must have been unique in the industry, too. But the guy he's best known for on All in the Family was a spry old codger named Justin Quigley, who was threatening to Archie, who was thinking he'd soon be old too. What's the over and under on the last time that bird got it. 1950 or sooner, I think that would be my best bet. Last bird, Bert Mustin, boy, he looked like a turtle, Bert Mustin. Well, he was old as a turtle. Bert Mustin was a character actor. Oh.
All right, I cannot believe how amazing this is.
That was sensational.
Dan, who is the woman singing with you?
This is the Dan and Jenny Trio.
You guys are great.
A song written by Art Collins and the Dan and Trio Do It.
Dan and Jenny Trio?
Yes.
Okay.
The Dan and Jenny Trio.
Okay, the
Why
Dan.
Is that, Jenny?
There's only two of you.
That's
guess what her last name is?
Trio.
You got it.
Yep.
Manny Trio should be in your group also.
See if you can get him in there.
All right. I have to tell you, do you guys just sit around and wait for some radio show in Chicago to mention
a
Bert Mustin?
You started talking about Bert Mustin, and we said, we got that song.
Oh, beautiful. Well, there was a time where I thought Eleanor Rigby was the most beautiful song of all time. I have changed my opinion.
Are you guys gigging anywhere?
We do.
Well, where do we find the Dan and Jenny Trio? Facebook page, Twitter, where are you?
Look for us, Dan and Jenny Trio, gmail.com. You'll see all about us. We tell about history stories, and we do gardening stories and all kinds of wacky...
History and gardening stories, Wendy.
All right. Can I just tell you, the next time we have a live remote, can the Dan and Jenny Trio please be part of it?
Absolutely.
It would be the best remote you ever had.
It would be your honor.
We can't
it would be our honor.
No, I think you're right the first time.
I love you guys. All right. Well, hang on. We're going to get your information. Hang on 1 second. Great job.
Amazing. Ruby. Thank you. The Dan and Jenny Trio.
What are the odds? You could give me a breathalyzer right now or a textilizer.
That'll probably happen later on in the show.
I'm so happy that'll I'd happen. Give in to anything.
Yeah. All right. Your friend Steve Bertrand is going to come by and give us the Wintrust business lunch. And don't forget, hi, Steve. And don't forget, upstairs on the stream, the Bert Mustin joke you've all been waiting for from the Tonight
Show
from 1975.
It's the Bert Mustin hour. What are you saying?
I know. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.